Those brunches and dinners are not only a way to help us build a church, they're great ways of having fellowship and getting to know one another. If you find one of them offered by someone you don't know, that's a very good one to attend. Please see Sue Spriggs or any member of the Women's Guild and sign up right away. Yesterday, I performed a marriage ceremony for Bill and Susan Selby, who have been attending this church. They're present this morning. If they are down in Fellowship Hall when church is over, please look for them and say hello. One Sunday morning last October at 3:30, when most of us were sound asleep, something happened at a physics laboratory near Chicago, which may one day change the way we think about the universe and how it works. A group of scientists managed to get a huge piece of equipment called a particle accelerator to produce a collision of proton and antiproton beams that created 1.6 trillion volts of energy. They were trying to understand the Big Bang theory of how the universe began. They think that the evidence they now have in hand supports the notion that about 20 billion years ago, all the mass of the universe that we can observe, all of its stars and planets and galaxies, coexisted in a volume of space smaller than the head of a pin. Are you listening? People do not always start listening when the speaker starts to talk, so it may be a good idea to repeat this incredible theory. All the matter in the whole universe, compressed into a ball about the size of the head of a pin. I have read that theory many times, but it hasn't gotten any easier for me. I know how many problems there are for a highly intelligent person who is trying to understand how a God can be made to fit into this universe. It isn't easy. There are 1,000 questions left unanswered. But the notion of a God almost begins to look easy beside the physics of the Big Bang theory. Everything that is, the Earth, the Sun, the Milky Way, galaxy, all the countless other galaxies, all squeezed together in a volume of space no bigger than a pinhead. The density of this mass, they tell us, was unbelievable. The temperature of it was enormous. Suddenly it was too much. An explosion sent it flying through the infinity of space, expanding and cooling as it went, and the universe we presently know was born. I suppose you could call it creation. The director of Fermilab has this to say about the experiment that was successful last October. It is a general feeling among my colleagues that we are on the brink of some new concept of reality. We have begun to glimpse remarkable symmetries and profound beauties, properties of matter that were unimagined a decade ago. It raises goose pimples among many of us. I don't understand particle physics very well, but I understand language well enough to realize how much his words sound like the language of religion. I share the goose pimples, and my conviction gets stronger that science and religion, instead of being mortal enemies, as many still think, are more and more converging toward some remarkable and thrilling unity about the nature of the world we live in. Most of us cannot entertain the complexities of particle physics very long, so I would like to offer you a different kind of challenge from something else I have seen in print recently. Several weeks ago, in the Christian Century, I came upon an article entitled, God, the Home Repair Company, and I. From way out in left field, in an unexpected kind of way, it also said some things I believe in, so I decided to adapt it for the pulpit and share it with you this morning. Under a different title, which I hope will make sense as we go along, it's Tuesday, No God in Sight. A man by the name of Michael King wrote the story. He seems to have been, or to be now, a seminary student and a part-time pastor for a church. In his spare time, to get money for groceries and the rent, he works as a roving repairman in a big city slum. This is roughly how his story goes. Every Tuesday and Friday morning, I report for work in South Philadelphia, where the offices and warehouse of the Home Repair Company are located. These are not my days to find God. I look for Him only on Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, when I'm a seminary student and a minister. On Monday, I neither look for God nor do home repairs. That's my day off. On this particular, very ordinary Tuesday, I head for work on the expressway, dodging potholes and drivers zipping in and out of lanes, and hoping my battered old Plymouth won't stall and get me on the morning television traffic report as the driver of a small gray car that is blocking traffic all the way to Conshohocken. But I make it to my usual breakfast spot, McDonald's. I hand over $1.37 for a sausage McMuffin without eggs and a large cup of coffee, and I carry my tray to the usual booth across from the bag lady, who croaks to anyone close on Tuesday morning about her assorted angels and demons. I read the Inquirer, drink my coffee, eat my sandwich, and tune in once in a while to the bag lady's solitary conversation. Sometimes she includes me in it, asking what I think about the CIA agent disguised as a cat who constantly stalks her through the city. I leave the bag lady behind and find myself at the home repair company office, dressed in jeans that threaten to split at any moment and in a jacket made stiff with spots of caulk and roof tar. My boss gives me a work order to fix a water-damaged bathroom ceiling in a slum apartment, loads me up with drywall, joint compound, and joint tape, and then hands me a note which says that a certain tenant has called in to complain about how a home repair worker walked on his bed while fixing the windows and left boot prints. I know who that was, so I try to look contrite and hurry off like a man who intends to live a new and reformed life. Potholes, broken down Plymouths, bag ladies, sausage sandwiches and coffee, drywall, sour notes. God is obviously not going to appear until tomorrow. when I head to the seminary library to track him down so that I can stick him somewhere in my next sermon. God appears in miracles and prayers and heavy theological reflection, I tell myself, not in drywall dust. A long time ago, I remembered, the prophet Elijah had gotten used to looking for God in great events. And so it was quite like him when he got into a religious debate with the prophets of Baal to expect a miracle. In their duel to see which God was greater, each side was to prepare a sacrifice and then call down divine fire to consume it. The story says that the prophets of Baal did their best, ranting and raving all afternoon, but nothing happened. Elijah taunts them. Maybe your God is too busy. Maybe he has gone on a trip. Maybe, he even says, your God had to go to the bathroom. And then, to add drama to the miracle he expects, he pours water all over his sacrifice to make it that much harder to set on fire. Sure enough, this old story declares, Yahweh responded with a fire that devoured even the stones and the earth surrounding the altar. It was impressive stuff. But even after it was over, the worship of Baal not only continued, but got even more intense than ever. Elijah, drained and defeated in spirit, went off to a cave to regroup. And then a strange thing happens. Certainly one of the strangest things in any of those Old Testament stories. The story has God come to Elijah, but not at all in the way Elijah expected. You might like to hear the words. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. God had arrived. Not in awesome miracle, but in what other translations call a still, small voice, or a sound of gentle stillness. What you might hear alone in your house, late some afternoon, or out on a lake, at sundown. The story seems to say, look for God in the quiet, ordinary course of daily life. Well, says Mr. King, I tend to forget this, especially on Tuesdays when I'm working for the home repair company. I want to cut God off from dirty, smelly, dusty, ordinary life, and put him in majestic churches and sacred texts and ponderous music and rare moments of miracle and ecstasy. God will reappear on Sunday in church or on Wednesday afternoon in the seminary class, but right now it's Tuesday. No God in sight. And then I think about a book I just read by Virginia Owens, a book entitled, And the Trees Clapped Their Hands, by a woman who sees herself as a spy tracking down God within ordinary reality, seeing the divine image shining even in the faces of a postman, a businessman, a cowboy, a waitress. Faces she watches over coffee at Wendy's. They are unaware, she thinks, that the wonder of the world is invading their bodies. As they chew their French fries and swallow their ketchup. But for me, she says, for a moment at least, there is an extraordinary sweetness in those faces. The light breaks across them. They lift and turn, call to one another. Even should they not know and bless the life that is in them, or confess whose it is, it knows and blesses them. It winks at me slyly from their unsuspecting faces, bounds outside to the last shred of cloud, and slouches past the window again, disguised as the afternoon paperboy. It's still Tuesday, but as I remember what she said, the sound of a gentle stillness begins to swell inside my head. I dodge the same potholes and worry about my car. But there in the distance is God's sunlight. At McDonald's, when the bag lady croaks at me and at her demons, somewhere in the croakings, in a tongue I can't decipher, God is trying to speak. I take my drywall to the damaged bathroom ceiling and hammer nails into it, but I have measured wrong, and I have to cut an extra piece, which leaves an extra seam. God has vanished again. In the kitchen, while I work, the tenant putters around. She is old and weird, doesn't smell very good, and lives with a dog who has scattered newspaper shreds and less pleasant items around the apartment. She comes into the bathroom to inspect. Beady eyes notice the extra seam. Did you do that wrong? Did you make a mistake? Stupid woman. Messy dog. Disgusting apartment, I think. No God around here. I look closer. I look into the eyes framed by sad, wrinkled skin. I look at the dog wagging its decrepit tail. On the wall hangs a tacky crucifix. Beside the bed is a picture of someone apparently important to the woman. There is no wind, no fire, no earthquake. The sounds are very gentle. The voice is no more than a whisper. But if I can pay attention, I will sense that God is here, in the drywall, in my hammer, in her eyes, in the dog's tail, in those papers clumped across the floor. He is not trapped inside those articles in the seminary library. He does not live only in regal splendor in the church where I preach on Sunday. That's all from Mr. King. Changed somewhat and put into some of my own words, but I add a postscript. In a little parable about judgment, in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus criticizes some respectable, church-going people by saying that when he was hungry and thirsty, they gave him nothing to eat and drink. That when he was naked, they had no spare clothing. That when he was a stranger, they had no welcome to make him feel less lonely. The nice people open their eyes wide in hurt amazement. When in this world did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or naked and homeless and did not do what we could for you? And he explains all of this to them in what must be one of the most incredible statements in any sacred book in the world. When you fail the people you live with, you fail me. I am on the bus, in the office, in the bar, on the street, dwelling somewhere in every person you encounter. When you almost smiled and said hello, until you noticed the old woman was a mess and not worth the time. When you almost listened to the old man, desperate for a moment of attention, until you realized you were too busy. What you have to know is that it was I whom you put aside for some better moment. It's Tuesday. God is everywhere.